puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Gordon Goldsborough joins me now from the Manitoba Historical Society. It's time for Abandoned Manitoba. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
Now, Gordon, you have been very busy at the Manitoba Historical Society with various projects. You told us about one last week, and you have a different one this week.
That's right. I described last week the project we're doing on the disappearing prairie grain elevator, and I thought, well, let's stay in the same sort of theme. Let's talk about another project to document the disappearing barns of the rural landscape.
The disappearing barns.
Barns.
I love it already. Okay, tell me about this. Where did this project start?
Well, maybe we should just make clear to our listeners just what we mean. Of course, rural listeners will know what a barn is, but maybe some city folk don't. A barn is a structure that was once ubiquitous. Pretty much every farm would have a barn. And the idea was this was where you would keep your farm animals. Most farms 100 years ago would have been what we'd call a mixed farm, meaning they would grow crops. Sometimes grain and other things, but they would also have animals as well. And the animals would serve a variety of purposes on the farm. They would provide labor. So, for example, horses were essential because they would pull farm equipment, help you sow your crops, help you harvest your crops. But you'd also have animals that were for providing food of various kinds. So you'd have chickens for the eggs. You'd have cows for the milk that you could then make into butter. Of course, the animals themselves could become food, you know, for providing meat. The skin could be made into leather. I mean, it was really quite a thing, so that most farms, in fact, were almost self-sufficient. You know, thinking back to my own grandparents, for example, they pretty much produced everything they needed. You know, the only thing that, by way of food, that I think that they couldn't make themselves on the farm was sugar. And occasionally they could barter with one of their neighbors for honey, but raw refined sugar was something they'd have to buy, or coffee, because there's just no local equivalent for coffee. So a barn was really the center where all of this took place. And so pretty much every farm would have a barn. And so basically these barns were all over the landscape. And back in the early 1980s, there's a local newspaper called the Manitoba Cooperator. They decided to do a weekly series on barns where they would go around, they'd photograph a barn and have a little story about what kind of architecture it had, you know, who had built it, you know, what was noteworthy about the barn. And this ran for quite a number of weeks. Very, very popular. Everybody just loved this series on the old barns. The fellow who led it was a guy named Bob Hainstock. He was a journalist at the Cooperator, and he had help from a guy named Ed Ledahowski, who was a historian at the provincial government here in Manitoba. Ultimately, they ended up taking this all over the prairies, and in fact, they published in 1985 a book called The Barns of Western Canada, and wow, was it popular. You know, it was basically a bestseller because everybody loved looking at these pictures of these old barns.
Why do you think people are so enamored by the image of a barn?
Well, I think it's kind of like the grain elevator. It's a symbol. It's a symbol of agriculture. It's a symbol of how it used to be, I suppose, as much as anything else. And I think that sort of nostalgia for the barn is only growing now, because just like the grain elevators, the barns are waning as well.
So how did you then get involved in this?
Well, it was actually quite a bit of an accident, really. A few years ago, I learned through an acquaintance from my working life that Mr. Hainstock was living in retirement in Nova Scotia. And I was a big fan of his book on the barns of Western Canada. And I said, you know, I'd like to meet him. So they put me in touch with him, and we had a very nice conversation, really nice fellow. And I said how, you know, I was curious to know how many of the barns that were in the book or in the paper that they had published, how many of them were still standing? And he said, well, he didn't know. And I said, you know, that would be an interesting project to carry out. And I said, well, do you have any ideas as to how we would do it? And he said, well, why don't you contact the current publishers of the newspaper and see if they would be willing to republish those photos again? You know, this is now 35 years later, you know, and then ask the readers to say, hey, is this barn still around? And, you know, it might be useful to do that. And so he was very generous. He dug through his collections and he found the original photos that he's taken. They're big glass negatives, you know, where they have a piece of glass on either side of the actual negative. And he found a big box of them. He shipped them to me here, and then I digitally scanned them so we can get really good quality. I mean, they're just gorgeous. The color is amazing. And so we got very good quality photos. So then we started in the fall of 2014. I contacted the cooperator and they said, oh, absolutely. That sounds like a great idea. So every week we would then rerun the photo next to the original caption that had been published in the paper back 35 odd years ago. And we'd say, is this barn still standing? Does anyone know? You know, because one of the things about these things, although we had a picture of the barn, we didn't know where it was. You know, we didn't know. Sometimes they would say, well, it's in the area of Beausejour. Well, that's a pretty big area. I mean, so we would say, well, does anyone know where exactly this barn is? And is it still standing? So over the course of the next 15 months or so, from late 2014 to the end of 2015, we managed to find and publish 85 pictures of these barns and say, put out the call. Does anybody know?
And what's the response been like?
Well, I was surprised, actually. Of the 85 barns that we publicized, we only learned the fate of 28 of them. In other words, we only learned about one-third of the number that we had published. So what happened to the other two-thirds? We don't know.
Well, how do you lose a barn? Like, how can people not know where the barn is?
Well, it seems to me a variety of things could explain this. One is that maybe the barn has changed so much that although it might be standing somewhere, people just don't recognize the old photo. You know, the trees have grown up. Maybe it's kind of obscured. Maybe it's been painted. Maybe they've changed the look of the barn. They've taken parts off, mm-hmm. put parts on. You know, maybe those people just don't recognize them anymore. Or maybe they are gone. The barn is physically gone. And, you know, people don't necessarily always want to, you know, tell people that. So maybe it's just that, you know, hey, they knew it was gone. They just didn't choose to share it with us. For whatever reason, say two-thirds of the barns, we never found out. So I would interpret that to mean either that two-thirds of them are gone or that two-thirds of them, something happened to them.
Is GPS useful for this in any way, or cross-referencing them with records of old homesteads?
Well, it could if we knew the name of the original owner. And that's one thing Mr. Ledahowski, when he was doing his research, would find the name of that original owner. So, yes, I suppose if we had a limited time, what we could do is cross-reference the name of that original builder, because what they would often call them, they'd say it's the Logan Barn. And it's because the original family that had built it was the Logan family. So if we knew the vicinity and if we knew the family name, you know, we could probably dig and find a little more about it. But to be honest, because we had so many of them and we had to come up with them weekly, we weren't in a position to do that. But it's interesting. So of the two-thirds of them, we never found out anything. Of the remaining 28 that we did learn the fate about, two-thirds of them are still standing today. Well, that's pretty encouraging mm-hmm. that, you know, of the ones we found out about, two-thirds are still standing. The majority of those, however, are no longer used as barns.
How old are these barns?
They vary. Some of the older ones we found were built in the 1890s. Some of them were built in the sort of the 1900s. Some of the more recent ones, I think, were some from the 1940s, 1950s. There was one, in fact, that was built, I think, in the 1960s. So it wasn't necessarily that they were old. It was that they were in some way architecturally significant, or that there was something about their history that was interesting. So there wasn't just that they were just a whole collection of barns, because to be frank, one of the things we learned in the course of this project is that we had a whole bunch of people contacting us saying, hey, I've got a nice old barn. It's like, well, that's not really what we're trying to do here. We're trying to track down these particular barns
right.
to get some sense of, you know, what proportion of them have survived. So out of that 28, one third of them or 10 barns actually had either collapsed under their own weight or they had been demolished for one reason or another. So what that tells me is that a fairly large proportion of these barns are gone. And, you know, they were photographed back in the early 1980s for their sort of photogenic quality. So here it is, you know, only about 35 years later, and, you know, a large proportion of them are now gone. That tells me something about the nature of agriculture and how that has changed over the last few decades.
In what sense?
Well, as I said before, you know, at one time mixed farming was a fairly common thing. I don't think it is anymore. Now, there are exceptions, of course, to this. But a lot of farm families today get their food in the same way that you and I do. They go to the grocery store. You know, the notion of growing everything that you eat is, I think, increasingly rare. You know, I think there's fewer and fewer people. So the necessity, therefore, for a barn where you'd keep animals is just not as important as it once was.
Now, you must have seen pictures of lots and lots of barns. Do you have a favorite?
Oh, I do, absolutely. And I think the ones that I like the most are the ones that are a little unusual. So most barns are fairly standard in size. They're usually rectangular. They have two long axes. They have two shorter axes. They sometimes have an interesting sort of roof line, but that's the basic plan of them. I found at least two of them, though, that are not that way. The one, for example, is called the Logan Barn. I mentioned it a moment ago. It's near Minnedosa, north of Minnedosa, and it is eight-sided. Eight sides.
Wow, that's cool.
And it was built in 1902, which means it's now 115 years old. And it's actually in pretty decent shape, considering its age. It's still standing, and the owner is looking after it. It's in nice condition. He says that it's not as well structurally as it once was. But, you know, I think considering its age, it's looking pretty good, still the same. But the one that I think is the most interesting is just west of Portage-la-Prairie, called the Hill Barn, and it's 12-sided. Imagine, there are 12 sides to a barn. I just can't imagine why that would have made any sense at all.
It's the deluxe barn,
I guess.
I think.
But and it's a little newer, in fact, than the one near Minnedosa. This one was built in 1905, so it's a mere 112 years old, but it's in really rough shape. Boy, in fact, even in the time since I first saw it, it's deteriorated a lot. So it would not surprise me that in the not too distant future, it'll be gone altogether.
But before that, I hope there are some pictures that we can see.
I have ample pictures.
Where can we see those?
Well, if you go to the Historical Society website, you go to the address mhs.ca/barns, and it'll take you to a page where it lists all the barns that were originally published. And a lot of them say have question marks. So we're still eager to find out from people. So if any of the listeners can look at that list and say, hey, I know that one. I know that it's been demolished, or I know that it's still standing. That will be enormously helpful. So we will be looking forward to hearing from people.
And what's the best way that they can reach you with that information?
One of two ways. They can contact me by email. My email address is Gordon, G-O-R-D-O-N, at mhs.mb.ca, or they can phone me. My number is 204-474-7469, and they can leave me a message there.
Detective Gordon Goldsmer needs your help, Manitoba. So contact him, email or call him. Gordon, thank you so much. Tell us the clue for next time.
Well, next week we're going to visit an abandoned site where I suspect at least a few of our listeners were conceived.
What? Gordon Goldsboro making me blush. Thank you so much, and we'll see you again next week.
See you then.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba.